pause briefly as additional people come in and as council leave. Please be seated. All right, our next case is Hayes versus Hayes. Council, you may approach. Again, this is Hayes versus Hayes. Ms. Lears?
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, Ms. Long. My name is Alex Lears, and today I represent the appellant Katie Smith in this matter. If I may, I would reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal. Your Honors, this appeal arises out of a modification action that was filed in Scotts Bluff County District Court and a simultaneous contempt action as well. There are a number of errors that I have assigned in my brief. I'm going to focus on three today. The first is the denial of Ms. Smith's motions to exclude the testimony and report of Dr. Gage Sterminski. The second is the denial of Ms. Smith's motion to strike the untimely answer and counterclaim that was filed by Mr. Hayes. And the third is the sustaining of Mr. Hayes' motion for mental health examination over Ms. Smith's objection. Now, related to that first issue for Dr. Sterminski's report and testimony, there are a number of reasons that both his testimony and that report should have been excluded, including untimely disclosure. It was received two nights before the first day of trial. But perhaps the most significant reason, at least from a public policy standpoint, is that it relied upon recordings that were obtained in violation of state and federal law, specifically the Federal Wiretapping Act. Federal Wiretapping Act and Nebraska Chapter 86, Section 290.
Didn't Mr. Hayes indicate that the parties had agreed to some of those tape recordings at one time?
Your Honor, I believe that the record reflects the parties both engaged in unlawful recordings of one another. Not that there was an agreement, but that they had effectively been put on notice of each other, in that the legality of those recordings were addressed in a prior modification action. It was not conceded, or I don't believe that it was ever suggested by Mr. Hayes that Ms. Smith consented to the recordings. What was the facts, at least, that were uncontroverted were Mr. Hayes set up these FaceTime recordings, set up the call, exited the room, and then proceeded to record a conversation between the children and Ms. Smith. He was not a party to that. I don't believe that he ever alleged that he gave consent on behalf of the minor children.
Did you put on evidence to that effect?
Your Honor, the recordings, I don't believe any of the recordings were offered into evidence, but it was...
What was the evidence at trial of that? Or during... I mean, what's the evidence that we can review of what you're saying?
Your Honor, I believe in the second day of trial is when I had the opportunity to cross-examine Mr. Hayes, in which I asked him if he was party to any of those communications, and he specifically stated too that the communications were he stopped the recordings out of respect for their conversations. So I believe that that's implied he was not a party. When asked Dr. Gage Sterminski, when I asked him about the recordings on it was the third day of trial that I cross-examined Mr. Hayes, but second day of trial with Dr. Sterminski, he was asked about those recordings and that those were recordings between the Ms. Smith and the children only. So that would be in the testimony. The recordings themselves were not ever offered at trial, but they were relied upon by Dr. Sterminski in creating his report.
Is that a problem that they weren't offered at trial?
No, Your Honor. I think that it would have been unlawful for those to be offered at trial.
Your issue is that they came in indirectly, so to speak, by the doctor's consideration of them.
That is correct.
But didn't he testify that they were hard to hear, hard to follow? In essence, he tried to suggest he didn't place any reliance on those.
I believe that his testimony in that was to some of, there were a lot of recordings in this case. Some were simply audio recordings that he could not make out. His report, in fact, relies upon, outlines a number of those recordings. The ones that we have primarily issue with are the FaceTime recordings that he was able to make out. You see the recording in the recordings that he offered to counsel to review between days one and two of trial. And I apologize, that's not on the record, but he did acknowledge that he could see Ms. Smith and the children in the recordings themselves.
You believe that a parent can't, so you believe that the under the federal law that the parent can't monitor telephone calls of their children?
Your Honor, if that was...
Is that what your argument is?
Not that they cannot monitor, but that you cannot intercept a communication from the minor children. You cannot record it and then use it. It's actually two different unlawful things that were committed here under the Federal Wiretapping Act, which was the recording itself and then the dissemination of that recording. So
the child doesn't have the right to consent to under the federal law, right?
Correct.
So who does have the right to consent to recording?
Well,
does the parent have the right to act on their child's behalf under the federal law?
Yeah, I don't believe that that has been specifically addressed. I could not find any case either in the federal circuit or in Nebraska where we have reviewed that. That would be very problematic, I think, from a public policy standpoint, where we're going to allow...
Okay, well, public policy and federal law are two different things.
Of course.
So what are we arguing here, public policy or federal law?
Well, a little bit of both, where the federal law is unclear, at least not...
So where the federal issue law has is unclear, but he still violated it, is what you're arguing.
I apologize if I was unclear. I believe your question was to whether the minor child's consent can be given by a parent. And I don't see that anywhere outlaid in the federal law. So on that point, that is unclear. I would argue we have to step back and then we can consider the public policy. And the point of the Federal Wiretapping Act is to protect the privacy. And here we have one parent versus one parent. It's very problematic. And I wish that there was a case on point for it to be an easier ask of me or ask of you today. But
Would you agree, Ms. Lears, that there's quite a bit of evidence that's not favorable for either parent?
I would agree.
Okay. And that's what the trial judge had to deal with, right? And the court decided to maintain joint custody between the parties. And hopes, perhaps, that they would kind of work through some of these issues for the sake of the children. Given our abuse of discretion standard of review, on what basis can we really disagree with what the court did here, given pretty unsavory facts for both these parties?
Your Honor, I believe the crux of the unsavory facts related to Ms. Smith came in through this report by Dr. Straminski.
Well, there was other evidence as well, not just through that report. Wasn't there?
There was other evidence as well. I believe that the court, though, at least acknowledged in her order of modification that there was a lot of evidence that she had to hear related to Ms. Smith's mental health. And that was only through Dr. Gage Straminski's report. So, I mean, the bell can't be unrung at that point. And I believe that's why there is this... hard ban on any evidence being allowed in that is so prejudicial in the federal wiretapping, that there is that hard ban, that there is no kind of tainting of the evidence that the judge had to consider.
On your argument about the report from the doctor being received 2 days before trial. His testimony didn't occur, though, for a while, right? It was, and actually depositions were taken in between, weren't they, if I'm recalling correctly?
Between April 20th and May 25th.
Right. So where's the prejudice here?
The prejudice and the untimely disclosure is we had no opportunity to, first that the untimely disclosure was also the first time that we learned what exactly Dr. Staminski was given to review. And that's where we had this whole issue of there's much more than just the discovery and the current action that was given, disclosed in discovery.
Did you move for a further continuance so you would have adequate time?
I did. And it was denied.
And it was denied. Okay.
I believe that the court reserved that issue at the start of trial on April 20th, 2021. And then when it became clear that we were going to have a second day of trial, decided that the motion to continue was either moot or denied on that grounds because I was going to have 4 weeks.
Now, I guess what I was asking, you're saying that in May you still hadn't had enough time.
Correct.
Is that what you're saying? You did move for a further continuance? From the May hearing?
I do believe I did.
Okay.
And if I did not, I would suggest that that issue would have been waived. And I apologize, Your Honor, I see that I am out of time.
Thank you.
Unless there are further questions.
Any other questions? Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning. The police of the court, Ms. Lears. My name's Audrey Long, and I'm here on behalf of the appellee, Shane Hayes. I agree, judges, that the main points of contention that Ms. Smith has is that she didn't want joint custody to be granted or continued. She was upset about the evaluation being granted and felt that it drove the sitting court judge to make a whole bunch of changes, which we submit did not. There was one line in the order of modification that says, follow the therapeutic recommendations from Dr. Staminski. The rest of the court's order was a very thorough dissertation of what she heard from all of the parties, all of the witnesses, and said, as you kind of point out, both of these parties have some issues, and they've not always been the best to each other, and this is what I see as best for the children. I would point out under Zal v. Zal, it's a case several years ago, that even if a party doesn't ask for joint custody, the court has the powers to recommend that if they find it's in the children's best interest and if they find that the parties can generally communicate for the sake of the children. Judge Miller was very clear to say, when pushed, these two can actually get along. And it's something that Mr. Hayes testified to say, you know, less is more. I try not to engage. Yeah, I said some things I shouldn't have. But I hope that we can try to work it out for the sake of her children. And so I think Judge Miller's decision to maintain joint custody was appropriate in this. The division of who got the final say, if there was controversy, was appropriate. And more so, I think the best thing she did was push the exchanges to one time per week rather than the three that they were doing. That clearly was in the children's best interest, something that Mr. Hayes wanted. Ms. Smith, on the other hand, she wanted full custody, and she didn't get it. So unfortunately, that's
did
why
we're... Did she even plead for full custody?
She did, Judge, yes. I don't remember the specifics of it, but she wanted a modification to take away legal custody from Mr. Hayes, and in that asking that his parenting time be modified from the 2-2-3 split or 2-5-2 split, however you want to look at it. And then she testified that he should have every other elongated weekend from Thursday to Monday. So that's what she had pled in this situation. As it relates to the evaluation, I want to first clarify that the federal wiretapping is not, in my opinion, understood correctly by the appellant. That is under the criminal code, and it talks about who can and how it can be admissible. Nebraska has a very specific statute under 86290 subsection C on what can be used to intercept calls. And in this particular case, Mr. Hayes and the children fit those three categories or definitions to allow a call to be made. Furthermore, experts can rely on inadmissible evidence. And the record does not show that Dr. Staminski made his report or findings based upon these phone calls or recordings. In fact, he testified, some of them weren't clear. I couldn't really understand most of them. I based my decision on their interview that Ms. Smith gave and the testing that she performed. I then looked at some of those other collateral contacts, but the bulk of my diagnoses came from what she interviewed and what she tested. So I believe the appellant is just reaching for something, grasping at straws to say he made this decision based wholly on these videos. I think second to that, Your Honors, is that both parties engaged in this practice up until 2019. They then agreed not to do that. The issue that comes in why that was important and provided to Dr. Sterminski was that there's a pattern of behaviors. And for Shane as the movement to say, I think there's an underlying diagnosis that we don't know about that is driving litigation. Because if you look at the record, Your Honors, ever since there was an agreement made by prior counsel, we had been to court every single year since that time. Judge Miller even made a comment on the record, I haven't been on the bench that long and I've seen you guys a lot. So something had to give, and Shane satisfied that burden by saying, we believe that her mental health has been put into question first. She claimed that she was a superior person because she wanted full legal custody and full physical custody. So that automatically puts her mental health at issue. Second to that, Shane provided evidence at that hearing. He provided past orders. He provided affidavits. He provided some discovery responses to say, this is why I believe she should take this evaluation. So the judge ordered that. What is also something that the appellant doesn't want to consent to or agree to or acknowledge is that Shane was ordered to do the same thing and agreed to do the same thing. So she was in no worse position than he was. Unfortunately, the person she chose to do the evaluation had a conflict, and other names that were provided weren't used, so therefore Shane never submitted, but he was going to. And I think with that, he didn't change his position because of the evaluation. The only thing he said was, in day one, I don't think the kid should be in therapy. I think this is something we can sort out. We get the evaluation. The only thing he changed was, okay, I see it from a different viewpoint. Maybe they should be in therapy. That's not a whole changing of his position on the entire merits of the case. That is simply saying, I didn't agree before. Now I understand why maybe we need to do it. And that furthermore is why the evaluation should be allowed and should be affirmed, is because that was an added tool for the lower court to say, I've seen you guys a lot and we're not coming. We keep modifying, we keep changing, we're not coming to an agreement. Maybe having someone in a professional situation outside could give us a little bit of guidance on what to do. Now, again, was the only one line that Judge Miller used was, follow the therapeutic recommendations from Dr. Sterminski, that's it.
Do you recall whether appellant's counsel asked for another continuance at the May hearing?
She did not, Your Honor. She asked for one in February because of the answer issue. She asked for one at the April issue. She even admitted at what would have been the April trial that the 60 days granted from February to April was sufficient time to engage in further discovery and get whatever else she needed on there. But as the second day arose in May, there was not a request to continue at that time.
Thank you.
There was a continued objection to Dr. Sterminski's report that was allowed by the court, but there was not a second request in May. And I think, Your Honors, with that, I think my brief is very clear on what happens with the late answer and why it shouldn't be stricken. Even if it is, Your Honors, again, under Zoll v. Zoll, whether it's pled or not, the court has the powers to make an equitable decision as to what is in the best interest of the children. So they could have awarded joint custody, could have been full custody, regardless of who pled what. I don't think there was any showing of abuse of discretion by Judge Miller at all in the case. I think she listened to everything. She has a history of it. She made her findings. She found what she found to be in the children's best interests. And that's what she did. She ordered. And frankly, we believe that the order she has should be affirmed in all respects.
So she kind of split some of the legal custody areas between the parties along the lines of the Maddox case, which
yes.
was kind of a novel concept back at that time.
Correct.
Do you agree that that's a good way to handle this sort of struggle for power between two parents that can't get along as to divide up the responsibilities, or is it possible that could create more conflict?
Both.
Yeah.
I think it's both. I think in some sense, if both parties are fighting for it and they think that they've got a little bit of a win, maybe they'll calm down. But I also feel that the other side could be, well, man, I've got this part and I really need to go gung-ho on the two remaining parts. This is outside the scope, but since this order, I haven't heard from my client, so I think things are going well.
Well, the danger is also that by dividing that power, if the parent who has the control, so to speak, of education and abuses that,
right,
then the chance of a modification of sole custody becomes greater. So if they don't behave,
right,
in how they handle their apportioned responsibilities, they risk losing everything.
That's correct, Your Honor. And honestly, Shane had filed a motion to alter or amend because of that situation. And we argued, listen, there's been some pattern that this may become an issue where they're going to try to overreach and withdraw the children from anything that would allow my clients access and vice versa. So yes, the truth is, hopefully they get along, but hopefully they understand is if they start to abuse that power, it can be quickly taken away. Mm-hmm. So with that, Your Honor, we think the rest of the order was appropriately determined by the lower court, and we'd ask that you affirm it on all bases, unless there's any other questions.
Thank
any other
you.
Questions?
No, thank you.
Right. Thank you. Yeah. The matter is submitted, and good luck to both of you, and hopefully your clients will think about the best interests of their children in the future. Thank you.
Thank you.